Good morning. So today I'm going to talk to you about the subject of my dissertation. I was looking this over, and it was about a year ago today that I defended my dissertation, and a year ago today I just couldn't wait to get done with this stuff and be over with it, and now I have to say I kind of miss it now. So what I did for my dissertation was I evaluated annual and perennial companion plantings to see if we could boost vegetable yield that way, and mostly in small-scale systems. So the rationale behind doing this project for my dissertation, first off, as we all know, honeybees are in decline in the news and everywhere. Also, other pollinators are in decline too. So to start this off, I was researching alternative pollinators, more native pollinators, and I noticed that native pollinators, all pollinators, are experiencing a decline right now. As we know as horticulturalists, poor pollination is associated with poor yield and quality in fruits, so that's how it's important to us. And so what do we normally do in these situations? We bring in honeybee hives, things like that, to try to boost our yield. Well, in small-scale situations, this might not be feasible for the grower, and as well in an urban population, legal issues and things like that may prevent you from bringing in a beehive or other pollinators. Why are we experiencing a decline in honeybee populations? Several reasons. But one of the reasons is inhospitable field conditions, monoculturing, limited food supplies. I always like to say that when we're trucking these bees around, they're just getting one source of protein and carbohydrates. Their protein is the pollen and their carbohydrates is the nectar. So just like you and me, if we're just eating one source of protein, nectar, say McDonald's every day, we're going to have a poor immune system, thereby poor health, and this is a lot of what's contributing to it. So another goal of my dissertation was to provide supplemental nutrition to these pollinators as well. So my hypothesis and overall goal was that the strategic placement of these companion plants near vegetable crops would attract nearby pollinators and thereby increase yield. And so, of course, when I brought this to my old advisor, he thought, yes, this sounds really good in hippie terms and everything like that, but can the farmer make money off of it? So doing all of this is going to cost money, so are we going to get enough boost in yield to offset that cost? Specific objectives, I had many in my dissertation. I'm just going to go over the more horticultural-based one, but I did look in diversity of insects and other issues as well. But it was really to evaluate the impact of companion plants, so I divided them into two treatments. One was an annual treatment and one was a perennial treatment, and then tested their effects on crop yield. Here was my experimental design. I used to have a long slide trying to explain this with words, and I always just got caught up on it, so I think a picture kind of tells it better. So I had my control, which is these three that you see going diagonally this way. So I just had control, just crop one and crop two. These were 40-foot rows in a three-acre site. And so they were in a three-acre site in proportion away from each other so that the pollinators wouldn't affect my control and things like that. So my perennial plantings, how I had it done was, as you can see, one of the end rows was just strictly perennial plantings, and then the two adjacent rows had both of my crops in it. Then my annual treatment actually had my annuals interplanted with the vegetable crops. So one thing to take note of here is that with the perennial treatment, I'm actually eliminating one of my production rows to attract pollinators, whereas with my annual plantings, I'm interplanting and not losing a row due to that effect. The vegetables I used were cucumber and habanero. I used Market More and the Tamu mild habanero that we have at A&M. I use these species just because they were known that if you bring in honeybees and pollinators to boost yield, so we didn't have to kind of worry about that part of the issue. Perennial plants. In investigating these, we used a lot that we actually domesticate wildflowers in our lab, so we wanted to see if the wildflowers that we were domesticating were attracting pollinators as well, so that was some of the decision on some of these perennial plantings, as well as we paid attention to natives and just plants that anecdotally we knew attracted lots of pollinators. I won't go over these too much. I have them in detail here in pictures. So the first one is this Phyllanoda flora. Some of you might consider it a weed. It's a common planting in lawns. You see it all over. It's also called matchstick plant or frog fruit. It's also called Phyllanoda flora. So I use this as a ground cover in my perennial plantings. That actually worked really well. I had to weed my first my establishment year, but after that, this pretty much choked out all the weeds, and we're thinking about investigating it as a living mulch now. Next, we use this Berickia frutensis. This is a native to the coastal areas of Texas. In College Station, we have really brackish water, so we were studying this for its high salt tolerance. So we used it, and we had always noticed pollinators on it. Salvia Henry Dulberg. This is a really popular salvia that we recommend at A&M. And then Eisenhardia texana. It's a native kidneywood. So our perennial plantings, again, a thing that we knew might happen in comparison to our annuals is that we were going to have an establishment year. So here's our establishment year here, putting things in. And then the second year, things were more established. So we were thinking that the first year we might not attract very many pollinators and impact our yield. So on to our annual treatment. I chose several species. This was mostly just things that we knew from websites and also Ladybird Johnson Wildflower Center and it during my lit review, just things that were known to attract pollinators, as well as things that could take the Texas heat was another thing that I selected for. So first is this Borogeo officinalis. This is one that I kind of picked on my own. My advisor kind of ho-hummed it. So every time this wasn't looking good, he gave me lip about it, but it ended up working pretty good, I thought. Use that as an edible, but it attracts lots of pollinators. Cosmo bipinnatus was another annual, common annual. This one worked pretty good. I did have some volunteer issues with the Cosmos. Basil, we all know basil. I use the holy basil variety. It's a little bit more resistant to heat and drought. It attracted lots of pollinators as well. And then last, we did zinnia, which I'll have to say my boss did recommend the zinnia, and we found hardly any pollinators on the zinnia. So that's why I don't have a picture of a pollinator on it. On to my materials and methods. We started all of the plants in our greenhouses at Texas A&M, and then we later transplanted them into the field. This is my boss here, Dr. Arnold. I actually got to make him work and put him on a tractor, so that was fun. So we collected cucumber and habanero data for three successive harvests. So you see here from the fall of 2016 and then spring and fall of 2017. We didn't have a habanero harvest in the fall of 2017 due to an early frost that impacted our yield, and so we threw out the data. So we analyzed the yield, used that as our main effect. Then we also divided our yield into two main forms. We had raw yield and adjusted yield. Raw yield was just the yield as it was, and then we did an adjusted yield. So if you remember back to my my plot diagram, I had the perennial rows and then two adjacent rows. So we were assuming that the impact of a row would be on each adjacent side, but we only measured on one. So our adjusted yield actually calculated an adjusted yield for both sides, so impacting both sides of the perennial row instead. On to our results. So for our total yield, as you can see here, the first treatment, our perennial, was significantly lower than both the control and the annual. But the annual, just after the first season, was significantly higher in yield than the annual. So we did prove that doing this significantly increased our yield. It did so on the habanero as well. And then in the spring, we had a kind of a unique thing happen. Our perennials did catch up to both of our other treatments. But then our annual did the same as our control. So we're thinking about this, we're investigating it more, and maybe we're thinking that during the spring, maybe we're already at our threshold of pollinator impact, and so providing supplementals may not impact the yield. So we're going to go in a longer study for that one. And then on to the fall, as you see, we do have the perennial actually reaching the control. And remember, this is with one row being dedicated to planting. So it's actually meeting the exact yield of the control while being minus a row. On to the adjusted. Basically, we just see a little bit more of the establishment of the perennials. But again, one thing that is interesting to calculate is another research that we're going to do is just to see how many rows we can impact. Yes, we can impact one row to each side of a perennial planting, but we may be able to impact maybe two or three rows adjacent, and then that would significantly change our numbers. And again, I just wanted to kind of show you this. This is a lot about why the difference in yield was so great in the first year, the establishment year, to the second year. And that, again, the maintenance and everything on the establishment year to the second year, there was a big difference. After the second year, it really took hardly any maintenance or anything like that. So in conclusion, we found that our annual treatments were more effective in enhancing yields of adjacent crop species under our tested conditions and timeframes. Also, we suggest that the perennial treatments could surpass the annual treatments, given if we do the measurement of how many adjacent rows that we can impact and yield. Also, a time lag for the perennial attracting rows. So that is one thing to argue for the annual rows versus the perennials. Is one is that the annuals, you're going to redo them every year. So let's say if you have a frost or a really bad frost or something like that would take out your perennial rows, you might have to reestablish them. Whereas in the controls, you're doing it every year. On the same notion, the control, you're going to have that same cost of putting them in every year versus the perennial, where you're just going to have the establishment cost, and then kind of you're more in a maintenance mode after that. That's all I have for you today. I'm really excited about this stuff. If you have any questions, comments, you can email me, and I think I might have time for about a couple. Yes, ma'am, and you in the back. I did. That was another one in my dissertation. We found no significant difference in fruit quality, so I took it out. But yes, that is something we measured all the culls and the yes, we did do fruit quality. Oh, sorry. I had a question on did I measure fruit quality in addition to yield? And yes, we did measure fruit quality, and I didn't find a significant difference between that. Because that is one thing, as I said in the beginning, poor pollination is associated with poor fruit quality as well. Yes, you. Yeah, sorry.
But you said you interplanted the annuals. I think you showed a picture, but how was that arranged in a row? Did you actually plant in the same hole?
No, not in the same hole. They were just on about a 6-inch offshoot difference, kind of catty corner to them all.
Okay.
And that was one of the things that I had thought may become an issue was competition amongst and shading of them as well, because the second year I did a little bit better growing my annual plants, maybe too good, and so yeah, there might be some kind of them playing with each other kind of thing. Yes, ma'am?
Any evaluation of the number of pollinators?
I did. I actually have someone in the back that helped me do all that work. Thank you. Yes, we went out and we did netting, and we did all the diversity and frequency of pollinators per species. So that's why I learned that the borage and the basil, for example, were the highest. The other one's more in the middle, the zinnia, hardly anything. And as far as my perennials, the borage, frog fruit did very well, as well as the salvia. So, yes, I did do all of those painstakingly, too. Any other questions?
Thank you, John.